From a secret location in room 100 of 540 Jack Gibbs Boulevard, this is Craft. I'm your host, Doug Dangler. The Steel Wheels will appear in Columbus on Saturday, February 15th with six-string concerts. Links are available at crafttheshow.com. Tenor Trent Wagler is the lead singer and is here to talk to me about the group, their performance in Columbus, and their new album, No More Rain. Welcome, Trent Wagler.
Thank you, Doug.
Well, tell me about this new album. I understand that it is a look back at songs partially that the band covered earlier in its career.
Yeah, it was a really special project. We started out as a band that went under a number of different names. We didn't start out with a marketing plan. It was more of just friends playing music. And so in the meantime, we had released several albums under my name, under the name Trent Wagler and the Steel Wheels. And some of these songs we had recorded as this unit on some level, but most of them we'd never recorded as the Steel Wheels. And we had a lot of fans over the last 3 or 4 years since we became the Steel Wheels and really started touring heavily who had never heard these songs because we just weren't playing them. And then we had this group of fans who knew us from the very beginning who were like, come on, why aren't you playing these, you know, these original songs that you guys wrote so long ago? And so we had a wonderful weekend where we just spent a couple days in the studio and we just played these songs, many of which had new and different arrangements. And so they became new to us as well. And it was just a really enjoyable experience to go back to songs that were, you know, 8 or 9 years old and find that we really wanted to bring them to the fore again.
I remember seeing something about when Elton John went to Australia, he hadn't played some of his songs in years and he had to relearn all of them. Was that something that you guys had to do for this project?
We definitely had to rehearse, and I had to remember lyrics and go back and check old notes and make decisions in some cases because I wasn't even sure whether I had decided that this was the lyric or that was the lyric. So yeah, it was kind of like going through old boxes in an attic and reminding yourself of little moments and little songs. And also, like a photograph, it kind of takes you back to where you were when you were writing a song. And so it was a very enjoyable time to kind of bring those images back to yourself and relearn them together. And like I said, some of the songs we'd never played as a band and some we had in some live situation. But most of them were kind of out of our rotation, so we needed to really do some rehearsing.
Tell me about The Race, which is a song that I believe that you wrote, right?
Yeah.
I've got a hope that never fails me. And I've got a song, must be sung. Timbers turn and the winds are wailing. Oh, I got a race, it must be.
What were you going for in this one?
I wrote a couple songs with a playwright friend of mine. He was writing a play about an aging pastor in a dying church who was losing his religion, basically.
What's that? Sounds like an uplifting play.
Oh, man, it was. Surprisingly enough, it's a comedy. So he was asking me to write some songs that fit into this world and in that way kind of write a sort of quasi-gospel song that got at some bigger themes and wasn't a Bible-thumping sort of gospel, but still took the form of a gospel song. And so, I grew up in the church. I've always loved the gospel choir sort of sound. And I sang in choirs through college where I just loved the feeling of a true kind of, especially sort of a black gospel sound. And so that was kind of the impetus for the song or maybe the form I wanted the song to take. But it also, lyrically kind of just speaks to a sense that we all have a race that we have to kind of run. And even when we're doubting and we're hurting and we're not sure we believe in anything anymore, we just have to keep taking another step forward. And so it was written for that character in the play who was, you know, in his community was supposed to be the, you know, moral and religious leader. And he himself was
not sure of anything anymore. And so it was kind of from that perspective of, we've got a race that just must be run no matter what.
And you've also got a cover of a Tom Waits song called Walk Away that leads off the album. What led you to bring that one up as the lead song?
I think it was a number of things. I mean, we just loved the song and I had been looking for an opportunity to record it for a while.
Doc King was a widow from the bone of Cain, with a little drop of poison in the red, red blood. Need a way to come around the bend. I say I want to walk away and start over again. There's some things I've done I can't erase.
It was the first song I'd ever heard of Tom Waits years back. Just struck me as such a bizarre and amazing sound that this guy made. And so, yeah, I love the song. And then looking at it lyrically, and we had covered it some in shows, but when we started to talk about this project of kind of going back and going to the very beginning of this band and trying to pull what songs we wanted to pull through, this line from this song of I want to walk away and start over again just kept coming back to me as a really good theme for the album, of saying we're sort of taking a look back and we're pulling the things we want to and then we're just starting over again.
I say I want to walk away and start over again with this bird.
And so it felt like a great way to just start off the album.
What is it that led you to go into this style of music that does seem to be becoming much more popular, but is also an eclectic sort of non-mainstream sound?
Yeah. You know, that's not an easy answer. I have a couple different answers to it. I mean, I wasn't born in Virginia, but I moved here for college. And so one of the reasons that I think it kind of, I was awakened to it was being in an atmosphere in a place where there still was a sense of regionalism to music in the area. I grew up in the Midwest and in Indiana and Kansas specifically, and never really had the sense that, like, okay, Kansas, this is our music. This is what we do. But coming to Virginia, there was a sense of, like, Virginia has its music, and there's some history to Appalachian music, and there's old songs with, you know, the Shenandoah Valley featured and Afton Mountain and all these things that I can walk out and I can take a hike on right now. And there was something really beautiful to me about the timelessness and also just the currentness of that music as I came here. Simultaneously, in the midst of that, during my college years, I took a year and I went to Palestine, and I spent a full year in the Gaza Strip teaching English and just kind of probably learning much more than I taught at all. But my official position there was in teaching some English. And while I was there, I very much got into music as a way to get to know people and also to just understand and learn a little bit more about the culture of the Palestinians that I was there to meet. And got to do some lesson exchanges with, I had a guitar and I was teaching this guy how to play guitar, and then he would teach me the oud, which is sort of the Arabic lute instrument, and taught me some simple songs, and I bought myself an instrument, and I was just so captivated by this. And the more I got into it there, I realized that without the language and without the marketing and without any of the other mainstream things that kind of force our hand to what kind of music we listen to, I was just very drawn to their version of traditional and folk music. You know, I was drawn to simple melodies and older songs and a voice and an instrument or a group of acoustic instruments. And when I came back to Virginia after that experience, it just kind of opened my eyes again to the vast wealth we have here in American song through the blues and old time and bluegrass, Celtic music, and just all these styles that have sort of become enmeshed in what we understand American music to be drawn from, that I was just, you know, I was happy to just be a part of it and be a student of it and be able to play with other people who were much better than me and much, much more experienced than me, but try to glean some of that. So that's kind of the long story of how I got to where I was really inspired to try to grow in that music and I've also, you know, simultaneously wanted to be writing, and so it made sense that once I started writing songs to be playing those songs, it didn't make sense to me to go back to some sort of more kind of modern rock sound. It made much more sense for me to play something that was more acoustic and simple.
So that's
where we went.
When you talk about the regionalism and being able to find your music in a particular area, I noticed that you do an annual bike tour called Spoke Songs. And that's a bicycle music tour where you take everything, I guess, with you on the bicycles and ride around I'm assuming, region. Tell me about that. What sparked that idea? I have this picture of somebody with an upright bass trailing behind them on a bicycle, and it's not a good picture. It's a picture in which I'm concerned about that person and what might happen, you know, in the rain.
Yeah, no, you're pointing out a lot of the obstacles. So the tour started, we've done now, I guess, 4 full tours this way. And when I say full tours, it's typically been anywhere from 8 to 12 days. But it's a fully self-supported bike to work week, basically, for us. And that is, you know, our work just happens to be touring as musicians. And it did kind of come out of that attitude of, hey, everybody should at least take a week of their time and bike to work. And we should be no different than that. It started as a joke. We were talking about different ways to be more environmentally friendly with touring. Could we get a different kind of vehicle? Could we convert a diesel engine to run on vegetable oil? All those kind of ideas. And then this came up as a joke of like, man, that seems all very complicated. Why don't we just get on our bikes and we wouldn't be burning any fossil fuels at all? It'd be really easy. And then as many of us are wont to do, I went home and turned on my computer and made a search on Google, and I found that I wasn't the first person to have this idea. And I got really inspired by some of the activities that were going on the West Coast of, you know, bike-only music festivals where all the fans and the bands just go out to a completely remote situation and have a music festival, but it's all by bicycle. And found other bands that have toured in different ways with bicycles, whether they had a van that was pulling all their stuff or they were self-supported. And so we did 2 tours. Jay Lapp and myself, our mandolin player in the Steel Wheels, and myself did 2 duo tours where we did one in Michigan and one in Virginia, and just had a blast. And it was such a great kind of reset for us in the year of not only getting out there and sort of putting yourself into a very vulnerable situation in so many ways, but also kind of just forcing yourself to be a little more mindful of every mile, literally, that you're mm-hmm. traveling, and also really get to know the area that you're playing in a different way. And it forces you to get to know the people, to get to know the terrain, to get to know, you know, just every part of that. And then the huge payoff is at the end of the day, you get to go and just play music and tell stories and have a nice evening that way. We did a second Michigan tour with the full band, which included Brian with that upright bass. And then we did our latest tour we did was in North Carolina with all the entire band. And we did about 10 days again. And man, that was a real test of our stamina. North Carolina has some serious mountains, and we found some very treacherous terrain to deal with. But it's something we love to do. I don't know for certain that we'll keep on doing these bike tours every year. It gets more and more complicated as the band gets more sought after for different festivals that we just don't want to miss. It's hard to schedule a full 10-day tour in there where you are, because that's the one thing, is you're bound to a, as you said, to a region. You can only go so far each day on a bike. So it's great if you have that time, but it doesn't look like this coming year we will have an open 10 days to be able to do it. So So yeah, but we still try to find throughout the year different ways to do cycling events. We've done some charity bike rides at different locations and festivals that we've been a part of. And it's just it's another thing that the Steel Wheels like to do, partly as a band, just to get ourselves out of the van and get some exercise, but also mm-hmm. it's a great way to meet people. And just to encourage cycling as a way of transportation and recreation is a big part of who we are.
Okay, if it's helpful at all for this summer, I'll point out that Ohio is mostly flat. And
yes, we know that very well. We've driven through Ohio many times. But no, you're right. You're right. Ohio would be a good option. Michigan was great to us. And Ohio, yeah, I can't see that there would be any problem with doing that.
Yeah, we're just, especially I come from up near Toledo, which is one of the flattest places on earth. Well, Trent Wegler, I thank you very much for talking to me today. And we're looking forward to your performance in Columbus, Ohio on February 15th with Six String Concerts. We'll have the links on the website. And thank you very much.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
For more information from my guests, visit www.craftheshow.com. And don't forget, be the first person to register a comment on the craftheshow.com website, and you'll be registered to win a prize package. This is Doug Dangler. Until next time, be creative.